back at the county level. And if the feds don't like it, they'd have to show us the place in the Constitution that mandates federal taxes. According to Zeitgeist, that statute doesn't exist. Next, my plan calls for 2% more of each tax to be retained by the county each year. In the year 2011, we'd keep 2% of each tax we collect, but by the year 2020, we'd keep 20%. This would force federally funded programs to compete for dwindling resources. It's like an incremental jubilee that would leave us free entirely over the course of 50 years, but would give everyone time to adjust. Maybe, in the end, the military would need to have a bake sale to buy a bomber. How could that money be distributed so it wouldn't create the same needier-than-thou competition we're in currently? Municipal deficits have pitted aid organizations against one another. Everyone's vying to show that their group is more victimized and oppressed than the next. Rather than survival of the fittest, it's survival of the loudest. You've seen our city council meetings. The world has now seen our city council meetings. The sad thing is that that woman was coherent compared to some. So how do you shift the debate from who you save first to where you start first in order to save everyone eventually? That's what I've been puzzling out lately. Here's my answer. Fund the proposals that would give the most number of people the freedom to stop doing harm. This would start an interesting sort of competition. Rather than arguing over who's been victimized the most, we'd want to show who's doing the most victimizing. But this wouldn't be a matter of blame or finger-pointing, exactly the opposite. We'd show what institutions leave us little choice. Politics are a way of forcing other people to do what we believe is right, instead of taking responsibility ourselves. It rests on the assumption that some of us are more enlightened than others. The right targets pregnant teens, gays, and people on welfare. The left targets the so-called privileged and affluent. This plan says, before you force anyone else to do right, first look objectively, without guilt, at the harm you're doing. Look at what forces you into unhealthy compromises. What would help you get out of this bind? I often hear people talk about privilege, and I wonder who they mean. It seems like before you can be privileged, you'd have to be secure. A friend once said that the only difference between him and a street person is a certain number of paychecks. How many can you stand to lose? Is that security? Is that affluence? Every time that someone else loses their home, does that make us all more equal? Next Thursday at 2, I've been invited to co-interview Vivek Chibber, an expert on economic sociology and empire in India. I'll post the interview on radioforall.net with next week's show, where I'll also talk about Ellen Frank's book, The Raw Deal, How Myths and Misinformation About the Deficit, Inflation, and Wealth Impoverish America. Let's break for Chris Pierce with Keep On Keeping On, and we'll return to the question of whether someone without the right to do no wrong can ever be free, much less privileged.
This is Janaea, and I want to welcome you to Tickling the Belly of the Beast from the heartland of Santa Cruz. And you just heard Jack Chaney. I have two very special guests with us for this afternoon. Well, they'll be with us from 2 to 3. And I had the honor and the privilege of spending the afternoon with them yesterday. what an experience. Afterwards, I felt like I spent 2 months studying restorative yoga, sat in natural hot springs for hours, had a deep tissue body massage, and then was meditating in a cave in the Himalayas for a year. I want to welcome Jack and Sequoia Cheney, two incredible spiritual healing channels. And folks, they live very close by. They're in Pajaro. Welcome, Jack and Sequoia.
Hi, Janaea.
Hi,
everybody.
Hi, Janaea.
Welcome. It's really a privilege and an honor to have you here.
Well, it's an honor to be here. Thank you.
They do this on sacred land called Three Trees. And I just want to start with their story about Three Trees and how they came to create this space of healing. Which one? Sequoia, do you want to share that story briefly? Because we've got a lot of ground to cover here.
Okay, I'll be happy to talk about it briefly. Around 11 years ago, Jack and I were living in PG, working at the prison.
That's Pacific Grove?
Right.
Okay.
Pacific Grove, California. And we were working in the prison system. I was running an arts program, and Jack was working in mental health. And we knew that we wanted to find land that would be a sanctuary for us. Mm-hmm. So my favorite pastime in the whole world was going to look for houses. And I knew that we couldn't afford anything, but I loved looking anyway. So one day we go out with a realtor, and I told her what we were looking for. And she really didn't have anything, but we planted the seed. And then the next day, that weekend, she called and she said to me, "I think I found your home." I said, "Oh, yeah, right." So she took us out, and we ended up in Watsonville in Pajaro in this gorgeous area, and driving down this long, enchanted driveway with all the eucalyptus trees. Jack and I both knew at that moment that was our home, even before we saw the house. Mm. And so the land spoke to us. And we've been there 11 years and have developed what we call now Three Trees. And we do a lot of beautiful healing work and ceremony there.
I know. I was a recipient yesterday. And the healing is phenomenal. And the music. Jack also plays the flute, the harp. There was drumming, sacred singing bowls. And Jack, would you like to say a little bit about the healing work that you do and the ways in which you release inner blockages?
Well, you know, essentially our work is spiritually based.
Yes.
And in that regard, we really can't assume that much authorship. Our work is just to get out of the way and to allow the creator, the source to speak through us and to lift the people that come to us. And it's really our pleasure, our joy. It's that thing that we give thanks for in our lives every day, for being able to be there for people in that way.
I know I barely have words to describe what happened yesterday, and that, as you know, is very unusual for me, but basically a much deeper sense of peace and the internal chatter kind of disappeared.
I can give the audience just a little visual about what we do. People come to see Jack and I for all sorts of reasons. Whether they're feeling that they're stuck in their life and they can't move forward, mm-hmm. whether they have serious physical illnesses, cancer, debilitating illnesses, whether they're suffering from emotional stresses from childhood, mm-hmm. or whatever has brought them to us. Mm-hmm. There's a calling within them to come. They mm-hmm. find us. So basically when they come, the first thing that we do is we welcome them in into the yurt. And Jack will blow the conch in the four directions, calling in the spirits that work with us mm-hmm. and on the land, knowing that they're there and they're ready to receive whatever Creator has in store for them. And then they go into our healing room, which is nestled in this beautiful eucalyptus forest, and the trees and It's just gorgeous. And they lie on a massage table under a crystal bed from a healer called John of God. Mm-hmm. And during that time, they connect with spirit, they connect with their angels, they connect with God, they connect with anyone they have a relationship with, asking for help, asking to be assisted in letting go of anything that's not serving them on an emotional level, on a physical level, on a spiritual level. That they're mm-hmm. ready and willing to do that work. Mm-hmm. Forgiveness is a big part of the healing process. We ask them to call people up in their mind's eye and ask for forgiveness or give forgiveness and allow that to leave their physical body, mm-hmm. anything that might be attached. After 30 minutes, we come back into the room and Jack raises the vibration even higher with native flutes, crystal mm-hmm. boys, his voice. He channels vibration and sound through Creator, especially for that person. So whatever's coming through him resonates fully with that person on a cellular, emotional level. At that time, I'm an open channel, laying my hands on different parts of the body, creating mm-hmm. that space and that clearing mm-hmm. to allow Creator to come in and just totally embrace somebody with that love and to move them into a place of harmony and peace. Mm-hmm. And most people will say to us, as you experienced yesterday, words don't describe what happens because each healing is an individual thing. And what we've known over the years now is that it's not about Jack and Sequoia. We, on our own journey of our own personal healing and clearing ourselves and doing our own human walk, mm-hmm. are able to be open channels just to say yes and to give the person what they need. And it has nothing to do with us because we don't know anything. So if that gives a little visual.
It certainly does. And the love was so deep and profound. It wasn't an ordinary love. It was truly unconditional, and it was connected to the land as well. And it just came through you. There was a deeper understanding within myself of so much that I wasn't aware of before. I'm not in that space now. And there was a vast difference. Very
exactly.
Magical.
Thank you.
Yes. And Jack, I wonder if you would give us the honor of playing your flute.
I'd be happy to, sure.
Oh.
I brought the double flute here.
The what flute?
The double flute. It's also called the Mayan transitional flute.
Oh.
So
can you say a little
here
bit
we go,
about
everybody.
It?
Well, it's made out of cedar, the tree of life, and it's said that spirit plays one side and the human channel plays the other. So together, I'm never really sure what's going to come out. So here
it's
we
like
go.
It's like you never know with each client, each person that you
true.
See. It's so unique and beautiful. Jack, Now that's just a taste of what you can experience when you're there directly, one-on-one with Jack and Sequoia. And how does sound relate to healing?
Well, if you think of ourselves in a sense as rivers,
yes.
You think of how important it is for the being, for the person, to continue their journey, to continue to flow, to continue to resonate with their surroundings. You can see how sometimes we get bogged down in eddies, we get bogged down in negative thought forms and toxic relationships and toxic behavioral patterns, and that causes things to kind of stagnate. Mm-hmm. What happens with sound healing, I think, is it tends to help people to begin that flow again, to reach that restart place where they come closer to their own source that's related to the source of all, mm-hmm. and be able to gain a certain amount of perspective and strength in being able to move through the things that are blocking them and to have their lives begin to flow a little bit better. So to me, that's the relationship between vibration and healing.
Well said. Very poetic, and I love the analogies as well. And the healing bowls, the Tibetan crystal bowls.
Well, essentially what's happened over the years is we've incorporated those things which help. The crystal bowls, which I think are a variation and an adaptation of the ancient Tibetan bowls. Of course, the ancient Tibetans didn't have crystal bowls. They made theirs out of brass and bronze. But we found that those help. We found that they help people to shift. And as Sequoia channels, her divine energy, we find that the energy and the vibration of the sounds that help just help the energy go that much deeper, mm-hmm. and to drive through and break up whatever resistance the person may be hanging on to. Mm-hmm. And so as a combination, of course, there seem to be greater than the sum of their parts.
Yes.
What we've witnessed or what we've experienced that when Jack and I are working together, our gifts combine into a beautiful dance. So our spirits are working together with the spirit of the person on the table. So the three of us and any other spirits that join in on the fun. The room sometimes gets very crowded. And it's just a beautiful, beautiful dance. And there's no other words that I can describe it with the flowing and the energy and the vibration and the healing. It's just a beautiful experience for people.
My experience, too, was a lot of it was unseen. But underlying that, there was a state of perfection that we were working towards. I had that sense throughout the work between the music and where your hands were drawn, mm-hmm. to release something. I could actually feel, I didn't even know I was in pain, for example, on my shoulder. Suddenly it was gone, or I felt a tension and that was released. And then I just kept stretching. It just, and it was all done in such a beautiful, pain-free way.
Well, right. It's so valuable that you had that experience with us, because it's very hard for us to talk about exactly what goes on. You've just had the experience, and so you're really like you have a sense of authority as you speak about these things, and so I think that should help people understand a little bit more of how it works.
And I've had healings with others, and nothing as profound as this. I thought I'd to have any experience like this, I'd have to travel for God knows where, but a great distance for sure. And it's right here in Pajaro. And you draw upon such depth and integrity in the way you walk your lives as well. There's a purity and a clarity to who you are. You truly do walk your truth. And I've watched you grow through the years too, and that's deepened. And your land has become a refuge for me and for many that I've met there as well. You have other spiritual ceremonies and gatherings.
Well, we were guided to establish our ceremonial base as a nonprofit, uh-huh. And so now we are in so much as the ceremonies are concerned, a nonprofit called Three Trees Retreat Incorporated. And maybe Sequoia would like to talk a little bit more about how that came to be and
the
what that looks like.
Of Three Trees.
Okay, the story of Three Trees. I have lots of stories, but the three trees. I'll talk about the three trees because there's hundreds of trees out there. But
that's for sure.
When we moved on the property 11 years ago, the first thing we did was we had a sweat lodge put up. Because our personal path is walking the red road, and we do a lot of Native American ceremonies and Lakota in particular. And so after many years of having people come doing lodges at the house and having all the potlucks in the house and everything else, we were guided to put up a yurt. And one day Jack went out with his trusty
Do you want to just explain what a yurt is to some people that may not?
A yurt is a big, round, circular building that the Mongolians used to travel in. It's just round and
canvas
with a wood floor and a dome top. Just a beautiful sacred space. So we decided we wanted to put a yurt up. So Jack went out into the forest with his measuring tape, hoping that there'd be a place for a 30-foot yurt where he wouldn't have to take down a tree. So for a few days, he kept going out there measuring, like maybe a tree would walk and make a few feet so we could do this. So one day, he decided he's going to say a prayer. He offered tobacco to Creator and said, if you want us to put up this yurt, please show us where to do it. Mm-hmm. The next morning, I'm in the house, and I hear him screaming in the forest, Sequoia, Sequoia, you're not going to believe this. Sure enough, overnight, two oak trees, we have never had a fallen tree on the land, two oak trees fell over, knocking a eucalyptus, which he had to take out. So hence, the three trees.
That's how Creator works.
Yes. And so the space was created for a gathering space. And
was it a stormy night?
Nope. No storm. It was just a wonderful, wonderful thing. And then Jack and I have done all the building out there. We built the yurt, the deck, the healing room, the walkways, leveled the land. And one day we decided we need some help. I mean, we can't do everything ourselves. So we said another prayer. And the next morning at 8:30, and we're very remote. Nobody could find us if they weren't looking
for
us.
You are.
There's a knock on the door, and standing outside was Juan and Antonio looking for work. Well, Juan and Antonio ended up being these angels that just appeared and helped us with everything. I mean, just so respectful
Amazing.
Of the land and of the plants, and if they would grade, they would move a tree or plant a plant, and they were just, mm-hmm. they really loved us and the land and helped mm-hmm. create a beautiful place out there.
Yeah, all the work's been done with wheelbarrows and shovels.
And it's so beautiful. Yeah. And you can, I know that you're connected to the land and that you listen to it because it's not been destroyed in any way. It's mm-hmm. been harmoniously designed and you can feel the balance on that land just as you walk on it. I can feel that sense of well-being very deep mm-hmm. within my heart. Is where it goes.
Well, we have a very, we have a deep sense of caretaking the land.
Yes.
Not in the standard kind of Western sense of ownership of this plot, but just doing the best that we can to honor all the life forms that are out there.
Mm-hmm. And I went to your website during the week, and let me see, I think I have something here about the land and how important it is to care for the mother. And may I just quote a little bit here?
Sure.
I was really struck by it because it so symbolizes what you emanate and what you do on that land. It says, the challenge, I'm not sure who wrote this, but the challenge that we face today is the task of returning our Mother Earth to a state of health and harmony. I believe you're doing that and healing the people. You're not just healing the people, you're healing the land. And when I first went to your ceremonies, the land was a little ill. It was in need of help, and it's been transformed. Totally. And we as people have tried in many ways to address the problems which arise out of our misuse and overuse of precious resources. We at Three Trees have come to the realization that there will be no healing of Mother Earth or ourselves unless we repair and strengthen our spiritual relationship with all that is. And that's what you do. I don't know which one of you wrote this. One way to do this is to honor our ancestors, who I believe come through you in the work as well. Yep. I have no doubt.
Part of the work is, you know, a lot of us are familiar with the phrase, all my relations, honoring relations. And to walk in a way that, of a way that you're mindful of how you walk, mm-hmm. so that each step has a positive and a profound positive effect, not just on you, but on the seven generations that are to come. Mm-hmm. So it's not just the seven generations that are to come, but also the seven generations that preceded us. If you think about all of the strife and all mm-hmm. of the difficulties that our ancestors have gone through, there's an awful lot of healing that's left undone there.
Mm-hmm.
So as we heal ourselves, mm-hmm. as we heal the land, and as we learn to respect it, there's a sense that we're not only working on this physical plane, but we're also working and helping those who have gone before us, as
yes.
well as those who are yet to be born. And this is the work of our generation. This is the work mm-hmm. of our time, mm-hmm. you know, and it's right in our face. And I don't think we can ignore the spiritual aspect of what this healing means. We talk a lot about the resources, but mm-hmm. we still tend to look at mm-hmm. the resources as objects.
Mm-hmm.
And we need to respect the fact that our relations are also the water.
Mm-hmm.
That
yes.
the relations, our relations are also the air mm-hmm. and the earth. And that the fire inside of us mm-hmm. is a transforming will that we have to make a difference. It's not going to be easy, but it comes from that understanding and that embracing of all of life.
And with that, we are so connected. The fire within our bellies connects with the fire of the sun. The fire, all the elements are so much a part of us. As we pollute the waters, we pollute our own blood.
That's true.
And I love what you say about healing our ancestors as we walk. It would behoove us to remember what we're healing. Because we can feel that pain, too. It's in the dirt. It's in the land that we walk on.
It's very close to us.
But we have so many blockages yeah. within us that prevent us sometimes from feeling that pain. And your work clears those blockages.
Exactly. And what I try to tell people about when they're afraid to go to that pain.
Yes.
That the fear is bigger than the pain itself, and that if they can try to remove themselves from the personal aspect of the pain and look at it more as a story that they've lived, and that they can just accept it and then move forward. They don't need to hold on to it anymore. It just got them to where they are right now, today. Mm-hmm. And that it's just part of their lesson and something that they should just move through so they can help others who mm-hmm. are suffering with the same pain, mm-hmm. or they'll learn to have compassion mm-hmm. for others going through it mm-hmm. and walk with a more open heart. Mm-hmm. And that really in life, there's nothing to be afraid of. The fear keeps us separate from God, separate from our own heart, and separate from really being in relations with all people and all things. It keeps us very isolated.
And ultimately, that sense of isolation, although it seems so real, it's not.
No. Mm-mm.
And it takes experiencing that depth of love and acceptance and healing to realize that. I mean, people can talk till they're blue in the face, and you're not going to understand it until you, it has to be a felt experience.
Exactly. When we deal with people with life-threatening illnesses like cancer or other things, sometimes they'll come to me and they could be on, a doctor will tell them, you know, your time is over. There's nothing more that we can do for you. And somehow they come to us and they've reached a place in their life. A lot of them will say, you know, getting cancer was one of the best things that ever happened to me because mm-hmm. it got me in touch with my spiritual side. Mm-hmm. It got me reconnected with God. It showed me what was important in life, and it wasn't my work mm-hmm. and it wasn't my how much money I made. It's the relationships and the choices that I've made and how I've walked in the world. Mm-hmm. Or it shows them where they've held on to their negative thoughts or fear and their unwillingness to change. And sometimes it just changes. Stuck. It takes a small change to make an amazing movement in their own physical being.
Can you give me an example of some people that have come to you and the ways?
Well, we've had quite a few people who have come to us. One lady had breast cancer. Uh-huh. And she came for a few years, like every month, every couple weeks.
Yeah, while she was going through chemo, she would come and in between, which is something that we certainly we recommend that people stay with their medical care, stay with their highest guidance, mm-hmm. and our work just enhances and supports the journey that they're on. Mm-hmm. So go ahead.
So she would come every couple weeks and just have amazing, profound healing experiences. And the changes that she made in her own life and in her relationships and letting go of patterns that she knew were causing her harm. It could have been childhood issues, mother issues, mm-hmm. fear, trauma, whatever it was that she mm-hmm. was able to see, release, and move forward. So every month she'd go to the doctor, and the doctor couldn't believe how radiant and glowing she was. Now, this is during chemo. And she would go and go, and they go, "What are you doing?" And and she'd say, "Well, I'm seeing Jack and Sequoia." And the doctor would go, "Well, who's Jack and Sequoia?"
I know.
You know, and she goes,
"Word's getting out."
Exactly. And so months went by, and finally she had these tests, and they thought, "Oh my God, the cancer's spreading, da 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 da." But when they saw the reality of the test, it was scar tissue. The cancer wasn't there anymore.
Oh, my word.
So then the doctor said to her, he said to her, "You know, I never wanted to tell you this, but you had stage 4 breast cancer, and it was growing rapidly. But you were so radiant and so full of energy that we couldn't tell you that." So I think it was a blessing that she didn't know, and that she could kept moving forward with positive thought patterns and really feeling the exuberance of her life and making those changes that she was able to, you know, work through the cancer.
Fourth stage breast cancer.
Yeah.
And very few make it. Some do.
And she's still here and doing really well.
But there was intervention.
Yeah. Yeah, she's doing great. And of course, fourth stage is when it metastasizes to the lymph nodes and
go to the bone.
Shows up in other parts of the body. Right.
I know. I've had a few friends pass over at that point. I just find it so miraculous that you've tapped into such a healing ability. And I believe that through the work you do, you're allowing the individual to tap into that within themselves. You've given them the opportunity.
Well, that's the main...
The energy there.
Exactly.
It's very high, for lack of a better
word. We know that we are creating the environment and the space for the person to tap into that.
Mm-hmm.
We are helping facilitate that healing and their own relationship with Creator and the universe.
Yeah,
I bet you just sit back and watch and just are constantly amazed because you're both very humble. I know that. And yet, and on the other hand, you have such faith in the work that does come through.
Well, it's wonderful to see people rediscover themselves and rediscover their strength and their power to make changes in their lives and to move forward. Last thing we want is a cult of Jack and Sequoia.
Yeah.
And so, you know, as people recover and move on with their lives, you know, if we just hear from them every couple of years, we're happy.
Oh.
Exactly.
But they come back to other gatherings on your land.
Yeah,
they
quite
do.
A few. I do.
They do. We also, on the at Three Trees, we have teepees.
Yes.
With really nice beds, beautiful carpets, heaters. So people come out for intensive healing work. They can stay a week. They can stay a few days, have a healing every day. There's an outdoor kitchen. Beautiful showers, meditation trails. So when they receive that healing, then they can stay on the land and continue to receive instead of going home into their own environment. So sometimes it's really a wonderful thing to be nestled and cradled in that healing environment.
I know leaving suddenly can be so harsh.
Exactly.
And you can be home, and yet the phone will ring. Who knows, you've got children, whatever's going on. And it's almost robbing yourself of a deepening of the connection. Because you do connect spiritually.
Exactly.
With something deep within ourselves that I believe is connected with the Creator.
It's hard. It takes a lot of will, and it takes a lot of practice. Because when the phone rings, what happens is that we tend to just lapse into old ways of thinking and into old behaviors. The ultimate goal is when the phone rings, all you hear is the phone rings.
You don't answer.
Really? Novel concept.
Especially after a healing.
That's cute, yeah. Well,
I answered last night.
Yeah, no, that's my better half speaking. But I guess the goal is, you know, you answer the phone, and you're just not triggered inside. You know, but that takes some work, and it takes constantly going back and looking at what your mind is doing and what, you know, you start to catch glimpses around the corner, but the subconscious is up to, even as the conscious has its own agenda. Eventually begin to catch what those hidden agendas are inside of you. And that's where the quieting finally hits a deepening place. And so it's a matter of removing triggers, there's a lot of work on top of receiving the healings. It'll begin the journey.
Yes.
And it's all, you know, it's nice to be able to work with people over a period and help them, because there's a certain amount of counseling that goes along with all of this.
Well, you had recommended that I stay as best I can with the silence that I felt deep within. The internal dialogue was not as active. And how do I say this? I did have I watched my thoughts more afterwards. And then I felt fear arise. Well, who am I without the thoughts? Eeks! The thoughts came flooding back. And then I felt the divide between that inner spaciousness and the dialogue, there was fear involved with that, and I was surprised it came up, holding on to an identity. Mm-hmm. It went deep.
Yeah.
That's why I said it was like sitting in a cave meditating for a year. And when I realized that, I went, I'm not ready to hold on to that in my life. I couldn't do this. I couldn't do that. How would I? Oh, can you please elaborate a little bit more on how that process is? There's someone at the door.
Okay. Yeah, go ahead, sweetie. Okay. Well, actually, I've pulled up a poem I wrote the other day, and we were just down in Big Sur, and I wanted to encapsulate one of the experiences that we had. So I'm going to go ahead, and we'll just take a moment, almost like a break, and I'm going to read this poem.
Thank you.
Our place on the riverbank is ever waiting. Come sit on the children of the mountains, tumbled smooth during time forgotten. Find a place for you and your love to settle down. Sit close together and sing. The cacophony here fades away. Radio's soul-numbing chatter, engine noise and choruses of voices tinged with disappointments all disappear. Leaning our bones together, heads on shoulders, voices blend and the river sings back. Letting ourselves be sung by the song we are singing, we enter through a crack and feel our hearts one with the birds, trees, wind, water, all singing back. All that is left on the rocks, you and your love singing the first sacred song. Minds melting in the currents, souls soaring circles over our heads.
That was beautiful.
Jack.
I got to experience that poem.
We
were in Big Sur on the river one evening and sitting on the rocks, singing our sacred songs and just totally enmeshed in the vibration of the song, the prayer of the song, the river. And it was a beautiful moment. Just a beautiful moment. And then the next day, Jack wrote that poem, and it was just, I got to be there. I know what he's talking about. And it's a beautiful thing. I think when we get to experience nature in that way, mm-hmm. and really feel, when going back to we're all related.
Yes.
You know, and in that
with
quiet
the wind,
beauty.
The birds. Yes, the stillness.
Unbelievable.
And you don't miss anything.
No.
And it's as if the sunlight sparkling on the water's edge is speaking.
It is.
The ripple of the... It is. Absolutely. Yeah. It is.
And that's how people feel when they come out to Three Trees.
I know.
Why do you during think the healing. During the healing. After healing. And they get to experience this connection within themselves and their own heart that they didn't experience before. But as you experience later on, sometimes your own thoughts creep back in.
Rushed back in as if they couldn't wait. I gave them one foothold. And
exactly.
They came in.
What I tell people is the beauty and the peace that they feel is God showing them what their lives could be like when they do their work.
Say a little bit more about do their work.
What I mean by do their work is when those thoughts come in, that's our job to change them. If we truly don't believe what we're thinking, or we have to ask ourselves, is that true about me now? Is that something I really feel about myself? Or is that a fear? I have a choice now. I can let that go. I don't need to carry that with me anymore.
So follow that thought backwards. Where
exactly.
does it originate and why?
Exactly. And so you get glimpses, even, you know, after healing, when those either thoughts or emotions or feelings or physical pain come up, I tell people to say, okay, I feel you, but I feel you as you're leaving my body. I feel you as the emotion that I stuck into my body from that experience. But mm-hmm. I'm letting you go now. I know you are leaving. I am not reattaching. You're leaving.
And you can actually, you can feel that.
Yes.
I certainly did.
Yeah.
There's a process that's all too human and very destructive. We tend to build fortresses around our fears, and we reinforce these fortresses. And really, the fear is the illusion. The fear is what keeps us separate from our neighbors, from our family. It redefines everyone as another. Mm-hmm. And as we begin to catch ourselves doing that, then we can begin to heal. Because the more we isolate ourselves in these fortresses, the harder it is on the body. Harder it is on the immune system.
Can you say a bit more about that?
Well, I was talking to a doctor the other day, and we were talking about some of the diseases that people are we're facing, and we were talking about how the mind is the thing that actually kills people.
Hmm.
That the mind is the source of most disease, and it's the source of continued suffering, for whatever reason, wherever the disease comes from. Mm-hmm. It's hard to pin that down. But say you're suffering from one thing or another, it's the mind, it's the fear, it's the anxiety, it's the constant rumination over these fears that keeps us from successfully healing and recovering. And I think that's, that's what I mean.
That's well said. It's almost as if there's a tape and there's a loop. Mm-hmm. There are grooves in the mind and it gets stuck. It just keeps playing and playing. And I found for myself, I can only speak for myself, as I've started to heal and more detach from that, it tries to tenaciously, there's a duality, cling and look for validations for those fears,
right?
More support, get the guns out, and
right.
I find going to your land, being out in nature, listening to sacred music, being with friends that aren't as quite attached to their thoughts, it loosens gently. I have to sort of trick my mind into saying this is a very gentle process,
right?
And stay with it. And being out camping, hiking is really my healing, and going to lodges.
Ceremony.
Would you want to? Did you bring any other instruments?
I just brought the conch and the flute. I've got one other flute though in the bag. Where's
that? I'd love to hear something else. It just so symbolizes what I experienced. Yeah, it's as if each tone, the sound, went through my soul. Went through my body.
It did.
Mm-hmm. And then you're chanting. You didn't bring the drums. The double drumming.
No, people will have to come see us to experience
we have
that.
To get your website also.
The website is www.3treesretreat.com, and that's spelling out the word three, threetreesretreat.
.com.
Do you want to give your phone number out?
831-768-7592.
And then I would like to know if you're going to be starting those little group healings.
We might.
You might.
Check on our calendar on the website. We used to do sound healings, once a month in the yurt. And it's a possibility.
Here we go. Thank you. Oh, that was beautiful.
Oh, thank you.
What kind of flute is that now?
This is also a cedar flute. It was made by a man named Night Eagle.
Ah.
The other one that I played was made by a man named Guillermo Martinez, lives down by Oceanside. And this one by Night Eagle was actually the first flute that I ever got. And
beautiful, if you could see it.
And it came, not so oddly enough, as a gift from my half side here, sitting next to
Sequoia.
Me.
Sequoia.
Uh-huh.
I see you.
And, well, let's see, it was...
long time ago.
Long, long time ago. But she knew that I've always wanted to, you know, find good sounds, and I was really drawn to the native flute, but I didn't have one, and it was an occasion, and so Sequoia surprised me with this flute, and then she told me the story that we had run into a store that had some very nice flutes, but that was before we moved up into this area, so she called the store and had them play every flute in the store over the phone.
I can see you doing that, dear one.
Until she heard the sound she was listening for.
So I've been instrumental in all of his flutes.
I'm sure you have. Mm-hmm. And what was the sound you were listening for?
That quality, that resonance, that heart connection.
Yeah.
It just moves you right to another place. And when you hear it, you know it.
And you know what I've loved, too, about the two of you? It's as if you let life guide you. You know where to go, what to say, your silence, what the next step is, and everything you do is of service.
That's been a process in itself with our own...
Letting go,
yeah,
I'm sure.
Our own journey, and, you know... What I always say is that we don't ask anybody to do anything that we're not willing to do ourselves, including our own healing work, including our own surrendering and our own letting go and our own ability to have faith and trust that we will be guided and we will be taken care of. And we reach little bumps in the roads ourselves, and then we say, okay, how are we going to walk through this one?
Yeah.
And... we learn and we keep going, but life's been fun.
Yeah.
And I think my most important thing lately is having fun. I want
to
have fun in everything that I do. And put a smile on my own face.
Yeah.
And so we've been having fun.
And this is lots of fun, Janaya.
It is lots of fun. Yeah. I've wanted to have you on for quite a while. And I finally just said, hey, you're coming on. What do you think?
Yeah, you did.
I think I sent you an email, and I'm going to have you on again.
Oh, good.
Well, Sequoia's come with a song that she wants to sing.
Oh.
That we will sing together.
Sequoia, of course.
Might be just about that time.
Well, we're going to sing it together.
And what is the song?
It's
I'd
a
love
prayer
that.
Song. It's a prayer for all of my relations. So it's a prayer for all the people, the planet, the water, the sky, the creepy crawlies, for everybody. And so your audience, I'm not a singer, so bear with me. But
would beg to differ with you, Sequoia.
Okay. 1, 2, 3.
Chanu Pakile, Yuhahoye, Waye, Loyohe.
Of it going out and healing those that are suffering. Mm. So many right now without food, shelter, and the basic necessities, and and the economic collapse that we're all experiencing. And thank you. I just put out a prayer that it touched those and those that are living in joy and abundance as well.
Thank you.
And thank you for the good work that you're doing and your compassionate heart and your willingness to bring people together and to share good information and to just be there.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Yes, thank you, Janaea.
Thank you. Before I say goodbye, is there any parting words for our listeners? Or I know you're getting ready to go camping.
Yes.
To a lake real soon.
Yes.
Eager.
I'm very happy about that. All I can say is for people to slow down, enjoy themselves, enjoy the people around them, smile, give a hug, enjoy your children, enjoy life in general, and just try to be as happy as you can.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Jack.
Yeah, everybody you look at is you looking back.
And there's always an opportunity in any painful situation. Always so much learning. That's what I've learned from you too.
Every day there's an opportunity. Each time that sun rises, there's an opportunity for change.
Yeah, always.
Yeah.
Well, I want to thank you.
Thank
you. So much.
Thank you, Janaea.
Thank you. Well, that was Sequoia and Jack Cheney. And their land is Three Trees. It's a wonderful sanctuary and retreat center. And their website is
threetreesretreat.com.
Sorry. And their phone number is
831-768-768-7592.
Well, Coral is here, and she's going to be hosting Cosmos and Cruzmos. And Coral, do you want to come on over? She's arrived. Yes. Jack, do you want to play a little bit of your flute? I'm sorry. Thank you. And in a moment, Coral will be on. Thank you.
Thank you. but they always have a twinkle in their eye when I talk about the dance. My grandma always says,
"You're welcome."
The inclination, the vision of the Democratic Party was always that not against occupation,
now when
but
your arms
sure
and your legs are strong,
right.
Now is the time right to experience and experiment
whatever
with the dance.
Right is.
Right, I visited many cultures,
and I love that you used
the
word occupation.
Yeah.
Even back in 2006.